close to my own heart because in 1972, when I was really being introduced to Velikovsky's work, I began what has turned into a lifelong research project. And let me just give a quick background on that. Velikovsky had claimed that the planet Saturn and the planet Earth had once moved in very close proximity as part of some kind of a system that subsequently unraveled. That the planet Saturn was the mythical god of the Golden Age. And he spoke of Saturn having gone kind of nova or some kind of an explosion associated with the disruption of that primitive system. That disruption being recorded, among other things, mythically as the Great Deluge. There was a large quantity of ice that reached the Earth as a result of that catastrophe and gave birth to the Great Deluge legend. But that was just an outline of an idea, and Velikovsky never really drew out all the implications of that idea, and nothing was ever published officially by Velikovsky, but I found it extremely interesting, and it was kind of an open field to begin seeking out the evidences historically to see if something like that really could be substantiated. Now, the result of that was that I actually arrived at a very unified theory of ancient mythology. It's highly Velikovskian, but it's not strictly Velikovskian. I did come to the conclusion that Velikovsky's Venus and Mars scenarios in the 1500 BC time frame and then the 700 BC time frame, that those have to be reconsidered, and that there is actually something like a myth-making epoch in which the primary themes of myth originated. And this myth-making epoch was prior to the dawn of civilization. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this point specifically is this myth-making epoch, I do now firmly believe, can be regarded as the age in which all of the great mythical traditions originated, and that the most traumatic experiences in the history of mankind were involved in this period of time. It was a completely different natural order. The planet Saturn did indeed, exactly as Velikovsky claimed, dominate the sky at that time. Now, I found some really extraordinary things that I had never anticipated. One, for example, was that in a number of ancient languages, the words in those languages for sun, these are words that are translated as sun, such as the Greek Helios, or the Latin Sol, or the Assyrian Babylonian Shamash. Those words for sun were the names of the planet Saturn in those ancient languages. Now that is an extraordinary idea that just makes absolutely no sense. Now, but sense can be made of that if you allow a completely different interpretation to come in. Now, I eventually realized that the ancient sun gods that are at the center of many of the primitive rituals and so on at the beginning of civilization, those sun gods were the planet Saturn. And you cannot understand the story of those gods, such as the ancient Egyptian Ahtun-Ra. You cannot comprehend those stories in terms of anything familiar to us today, and in terms of anything we see in the sky today. The planets were the gods. The planet Saturn reigns in the beginning as the preeminent monarch celestially, the universal monarch, the ancient sun god. And there was at that time a spectacular configuration of planets in the sky. It stretched across the whole polar region of the sky. And
Dave, is there any pictograph evidence of this? In other words, if people in ancient times could look into the sky and see Venus that close,
yes,
I can understand it would create the mythology you're talking about, but I
yes.
would think there would be a lot of pictograph recordings of that.
Well, I think that was a primary preoccupation, actually, of ancient star worshippers. The pictographs are everywhere. And Art, I can tell you that I do not know of any recurring themes in the total body of pictographic evidence around the world I do not know of a single theme that can be identified that answers to anything in our sky today. Not one, actually.
Well, what can you point to that points to Velikovsky's...
Well, I think actually all of the primary pictographic themes do relate to this ancient myth-making epoch and to a planetary configuration that evolved in very spectacular ways in the sky. Now, and it isn't going to be possible in the period of time that we have for me to kind of demonstrate a point conclusively, but I can kind of suggest some ways in which the evidence can be approached, and as time allows, I think people who get into this subject substantially and orient themselves to the various mythological themes, they will begin to pick up the integrity and the coherence of these themes. One is the idea of the ancient sun god. Well, pictures of the ancient sun god were drawn around the world. Now that image, which is involves a number of complexities, also occurs at very simple levels as well. It involves a circle, and inside the circle you have another circle or a star. Now that image of an orb or a star in front of or in the center of a larger circle is a universal pictograph of the ancient sun god. But that's only the beginning of the pictographic story, because that image has many, many different associations. But I'll tell you something else. If you look, whether it's Mesoamerica or ancient Egypt or ancient Mesopotamia, that star in the center of the circle, which is the larger circle, is always the sun god itself.
Right.
That star in the center is always Venus. Always.
Huh.
Now that star, Venus, in the text, in the mythological traditions, has a story to it.
Right.
Let me just tell you what that story is. And we have to sort of fumble our way into this first, because it is such a big subject and it involves appearances or forms in the sky that we do not see today. And we have to sort of remember each step that we're reinterpreting ideas, we're reinterpreting language in terms of the literal meanings that these words had for the ancients. But that star in the center of the ancient sun god pictographically, it has in the mythical traditions a story. That sun god dies. When he dies, the golden age ends. This is true in ancient Mesopotamia, in Egypt, and throughout Mesoamerica. When he dies, that star, pictographically in the center of the sun, becomes a flaming serpent or dragon, which is the ancient hieroglyph around the world, together with maybe four or five other hieroglyphs that are very prominent for the comet. The birth of the comet Venus is synchronous with, in the global mythological tradition, the death of the ancient sun god, who is Saturn. Now, whatever else one may think about these ideas, and you have to just gradually draw them out, it's a universal tradition, and it has not been previously detected by scholars. The reason it has not been previously detected by scholars is that they have tended to work in specialized realms. And when they have seen such anomalies as the name for the word translated, or let's say the name for the sun, meaning actually the planet Saturn, they think they're dealing with a local anomaly.
So what is that suggesting occurred? That there was a pass close enough to us?
Let's see if we can answer this question first then. What was happening fundamentally at that time?
Right.
We were part of a planetary system in which the planet Saturn loomed throughout the age remembered mythically as the Golden Age. It loomed as an immense body in the sky. It was the ancient sun god, the central luminary of the sky, the universal monarch. Now, if you take any region's ancient traditions of kingship, you trace the lines of kings historically backward, you eventually reach a mythical first king who is a very luminous figure, who is in fact the ancient sun god. And that and that God is the planet Saturn ruling the sky as the universal monarch, considered by every ancient culture as the prototype of kings. That's how powerful this entire experience was on the human imagination.
Suggesting then what? That it was in an orbit almost similar to ours, very close to Earth? Is that
well, okay, now we have to get to a level of a little bit more specificity. Not only did this ancient sun god dominate the sky, it was motionless. It did not move. Now, as bizarre as it may seem, it does not matter which ancient culture you go to, that culture will place the ancient sun god at the stationary center of the sky. It is the pivot of the celestial revolutions. That means there is only one place in the sky that it could have occupied, and that's the North Celestial Pole. So, however it may have occurred dynamically, the axis of the Earth was magnetically or otherwise fixed on that large, immense orb of Saturn. Therefore, the tradition of the ancient central sun, the superior sun, the best sun, these were the ancient terms for that sun to distinguish it from the body we call sun today. And that body in the sky has a very specific history, and it can be reconstructed down to highly specific forms recorded around the world, these forms behaving in very specific ways, and the history of that sun god, including the birth of the great comet Venus, which was mythically that central animating star appearing in the center of Venus, that it's going forth as the great comet Venus, was the exhalation or the departure of the sun god's own heart soul as a great comet, as the great fiery serpent dragon. And then there follows a period of incredible catastrophe, remembered as cosmic night, the wars of the gods, tremendous upheavals, and then a regeneration of the sky in a substantially transformed order. And this great comet Venus is just raging across the sky as this mother goddess figure with flaming disheveled hair, or as a flaming serpent battling other powers in the sky. But that cometary figure was, before this episode, the star Venus, seen in the center of the sun and worshipped around the world as the Great Mother. And that was the original identity of the planet Venus, as the central luminous heart soul of the original universal monarch.
All right, if that was the order of things, is there any suggestion what mixed up the order of things, turned it into a comet, realigned everything? Is there any suggestion in Velikovsky about...
Well, now, I have to first hasten to add, this reconstruction of a Saturn thesis and so on, it is Velikovskian at its inception. The work started under an inspiration provided by Velikovsky. Velikovsky never said that the ancient sun gods were the planet Saturn.
So this is...
That was my own research,
Dave,
but it
Talbot.
Is very well substantiated. And the idea of the central sun, in fact, has been noted by comparative mythologists on many occasions, but they've noted it without explanation. And when they've noted it, they have not also noted that that figure involves a name that was the name of the planet Saturn. So I did take the research significantly beyond Velikovsky's seminal work, and it began then a lifelong study of what I regard as the myth-making epoch, a discrete period before the birth of civilization in which man experienced extremely catastrophic events. They were the most traumatic experiences ever for mankind, I believe, and at the same time experienced celestial happenings and celestial events that were incredibly beautiful. And there was a yearning to return, for example, to Saturn's paradisal age, the yearning for paradise, the yearning for the golden age of Saturn. Remember that when Saturn is said to have ruled the world, that was an epoch of cosmic harmony. Every civilization really arose under the hope of recapturing Saturn's golden age. It's a really profound motive that you see expressed in all of the primary activities of the first civilizations, the hope to recapture the age of the universal monarch.
What would Earth have been like, Dave, with Saturn in that position?
I'm not able to address myself the dynamic issues or the meteorological issues from any scientific vantage point. I can only talk about the apparent scenes of a collective recollection. Now, the recollection is it was an age before seasons. It was an age before mm-hmm. cosmic cycles. There
yes.
was no clear distinction of day and night. So I have supposed that we were part of a primitive planetary system in which we were moving through some diffuse gaseous envelope, perhaps extending out from Saturn, and so that we were not experiencing the normal cosmic cycle. There was more of a greenhouse effect, perhaps, and that general diffusion of light tended to subdue the normal clear distinctions between day and night. But in a subsequent period, that idyllic setting on planet Earth is ruptured.
Well, you suggest idyllic, but by today's ecological standards, under those conditions, life as we know it might not even be possible.
Actually, that could be true. I can only say that there is an accord, consensus of ancient mythical traditions. I believe that they occur among all the primary cultures. They remember a lost golden age, and they will say specifically about that age, it was a time without conflict, a time without war, a time without hunger. The earth blossomed continuously, an eternal spring, no seasons. And this age came to a catastrophic conclusion. Now, it's significant that mythical theme does not stand alone. It stands right beside the theme of the former universal monarch, the sun god, who ruled the world while standing in one place.
Well, how does that stand up with the biblical paradise on earth that at once we had? Is there a connection there?
Oh, absolutely. I think the Eden paradise is an expression of that same collective recollection. And the paradise theme will be found, as I said, among all of the ancient cultures, but it does not generally stand alone. There usually is a central luminary presiding over that paradise, and it turns out to be the very figure standing at the head of the line of kings, who is the universal monarch, who is the ancient sun god, which rules the sky.
All right, Dave, we've got to hold it right there. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back and open the telephone lines for Dave Talbot, who's talking about Lukovsky and more.
Of Nine. You're hearing Greenland with Art Bell. To participate in the program, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Worlds in collision, could they have been? Could the solar system have been aligned, as Dave Talbot, an extension of some of Velikovsky's work, suggests? If you have questions, we'd be glad to try and answer them for you, or engage in any discussion you would like. We'll give you the full... All right, back now to Dave Talbot. Dave, are you there?
I am indeed.
All right, Dave, let me do just one thing. Let me give out a full set of numbers here. We're going to open the lines right now. The first-time caller line, in case you have never called the program, is area code 702-727-1222. That's 702 877-927-1222. We have the wild card line, several of those available at area code 702-727-1295. 702-727-1295. And finally, for everybody east or west of the Rockies, toll free, it's 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. Let the lines ring, please. Until they are answered, we will come to you as soon as it is your turn. Are you ready, Dave?
I am, sir.
All right. Here they come. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Hi.
How you doing, Dave?
Very good, sir.
I was interested. I heard you talking about how Venus may have entered the solar system as a comet, and I was going to say that might explain why it rotates the sun in the opposite direction of the rest of our solar system.
Yes, the physicists who have expressed an interest in this subject, and there are some very well-trained, very competent engineers and physicists and astronomers with a strong interest in this subject, they do emphasize the anomalous rotation of Venus. It rotates reverse from the other planets and very, very slowly. That's one of a list of anomalies about Venus and so on that are very noteworthy and have gained a lot of attention from the Velikovsky.
I've often wondered if there could be a series of planets on the opposite side of the sun that rotate possibly in the same gravitational plane or maybe in another gravitational plane of the sun, and maybe, as you know, different planes of the sun rotate in opposite directions and different speeds, I believe, or maybe not at different speeds, but they rotate in opposite directions and they rotate separately.
Okay, this is I'm sorry to say outside completely my own area of expertise.
Right.
All those subjects are very fascinating to me, but I just have to defer to people who are really expert in that area.
All right, very good. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Burden, Kansas.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. I read Velikovsky in the early 70s, and at that time, I just from my understanding of Velikovsky, I made some predictions myself that have subsequently been proven by science, like the hole in the center of the galaxy. One of the predictions that I involved was that the solar system travels through the galactical plane, and a couple of weeks ago, on Art Bell's message from Mary, he described a wave coming across. Well, this would fit into the prediction that I made about the galactical plane having a wave. Do you know anything about this, and has your studies led you to believe anything in this regard?
I'm all ears when anyone starts talking about that, but they'll have to teach me on the subject. I just I have no training in these areas. I've been so completely preoccupied with sifting through the ancient material and reconstructing the primary themes around the world that I have not had the time, except for more incidental discourse with astronomers and physicists that are pursuing the Velikovskyan areas of research. It would be nice to sort of have a Velikovskyan physicist, for example, sitting alongside me here, because these questions are very fascinating. And I'm sorry, I have nothing that I could say to add to your comments.
All right. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, turn your radio off, ma'am.
Ma'am.
Yes, turn your radio off, please.
Okay,
where are you calling from?
I'm calling from San Diego.
San Diego, go ahead.
I'd like to find out about Zacharias Sitchin's book, if that has any corroboration with what this gentleman has to say.
No, I think we're actually working in completely different fields of research. My own emphasis has been on planetary mythology. I've gone back and I have looked into all of the themes relative to ancient planets and celestial bodies. I personally concluded that the great themes of myth do have a very direct relationship to a spectacular planetary configuration in the sky. I believe that configuration can be reconstructed down to a surprising level of detail, and that the story is truly coherent or consistent from one culture to another once you recognize the original meanings of the symbols. And that this is all very literal, that they drew pictures and they told stories about great celestial forms. The character of these forms can be identified from a study of the languages themselves, and that you can see there's a coherent story there. It's just that we've tried to interpret that story by reference to our sky today, and none of the story, or none of the aspects of the story, make any sense in
all
reference
right.
to our sky today. Now, Sitkin is really coming from a completely different vantage point, and I really don't have an opinion other than this. I do feel that his approach to Mesopotamian gods that I did observe in a, and I cannot recall the name of this particular book, I did feel that he was not representing the contexts in which those figures are actually presented in historical sources. He was not representing those contexts properly, but beyond that, I don't have anything to observe on that.
Well, his theory is that he got this information by decoding ancient records way back, maybe 30,000 years ago.
Yes.
And so that's why I wondered if
you bet.
Had read about that or knew about that.
No, again, that's really outside my bailiwick, too.
Okay. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot.
Good evening. This is Fritz von Phoenix.
Hello there.
Dave, have you ever given thought how Velikovsky came up with his writing system, Yerevidinis? Perhaps he was focused on by some outside intelligence. What do you think?
Well, he was also a great scholar, and we have to give him credit for that, because he moved toward his thesis about the planet Venus through a series of steps. He was pursuing study of the time of Moses and became fascinated by the plagues of Egypt. And he concluded that there was a great natural event that occurred and could explain those plagues, and he began to look deeper, began to notice parallels in other lands, began to realize that
there's
a body in the sky.
Yeah, that's all fine. Well, Dave, what the caller is asking is whether there is some suggestion or any suggestion in his work that extraterrestrials influenced it. Is that right, Fritz?
Yes.
All right.
No, I think actually there is, to the contrary, evidence that he worked through a systematic set of findings to draw his conclusions.
So the answer is no.
I really don't think so.
All right. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the extraterrestrial aspect of the last caller.
Yes.
That Semyonti, in the Zoe Meyer contact in Switzerland, talked about a great event that occurred where basically the magnetic fields of our solar system were disrupted, and there was all the planets changed position. And this happened sometime between 12,000 BC and, the best that I can tell, around 2024 BC. And she also talked at the same time about a special relationship that we had with Saturn.
Oh.
So I just wanted to point that out in terms of the ET involvement.
All right, thank you.
Okay,
in other words, Dave, if you're working from known mythology, some of these folks are coming from a different direction, but the story seems very similar, and it would seem to me that in your work, you might want to investigate some of these avenues that would tend to corroborate what Velikovsky said.
I will indeed consider any relevant information that is passed on to me, and I do have an interest personally in these other subjects. and we'll always try to keep an open mind on them. The area of my own research has been on historical material, as I've said, so I just find these other dimensions fascinating and would like to know more.
Well, in pictographs and or even in mythology, Dave, there's a great deal suggested about extraterrestrial visits or visitors from elsewhere in very ancient times. And so maybe there is some sort of connection. On the first time caller line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Hi.
Hi. This is Dick. I'm calling from Reno.
Yes, Dick.
We have not been able to receive you tonight because this lousy station, KOH, has preempted your program with a football game.
Well, don't say they're lousy.
Well, they are.
Actually, they're a very good radio station, and they will carry the program after the game.
I would like to suggest that you get on KNX. Because of the skip, KNX comes up here very well.
Yes, I'm well aware of KNX.
And it's a much better station.
Yes, well, KNX doesn't do talk, sir. They do news.
No, I know. We listen to it most of the time, except when you're on.
I see.
Anyhow, this station has many problems, technical, and they have the worst conceivable local commercials you can imagine.
Well, you know, if I were you, I would be very careful about slamming your local affiliate, or you may end up with none at all.
Well, none would be better than this.
Thank you. And again, I would be very careful about doing that. You're going to end up with no affiliate at all. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Hi.
Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm calling from Laguna Beach.
Hello, Andrew.
Hi. Dave, I really enjoyed the show, and I've read Velikovsky's work.
Very good.
And I've been to Egypt and in the Valley of the Kings into some of the older tombs. And it is amazing, the murals, the astronomical murals surrounding some of these ancient tombs.
Oh, yes.
My big question is, in your theory, you have a Saturn being in the north.
Yes.
How would the southern hemispheric land masses view it?
Well, they wouldn't, actually, and it is interesting that the traditions nevertheless seem to be present. For example, there is the myth of the stationary sun among the Inca. Now, one of the great experts on Mesoamerican and South American mythology, Zita Nuthall, noticed that that myth was really the myth of the polar sun god, but it must have been carried down south of the equator and so on by migration over time. You even see the same indications of myths of the central sun and so on, and associations with the axis and pivot of the turning sky among the Aborigines of Australia. There's a great deal of evidence to suggest that what was seen in the northern hemisphere and gave birth to these legends did disperse around the world.
And it would be so big, it would be visible to the north, even from the southern hemisphere country.
No, I'm saying that they wouldn't have seen it from the southern hemisphere. The accounts, the mythology, the symbolism would have originated in that hemisphere where it was visible, but there was apparently substantial migration southward of those images and symbols. For example, at Cusco, in Peru, the temple to the former superior sun god has an opening to the north, which was noted by Zelia Nuthall in her pioneering work on the origins of civilization. And she claimed that myth of the former polar luminary was carried southward. In other words, the myth originated in the northern hemisphere.
That's very
interesting. This is why we have such extraordinary parallels in the myths of this ancient sun god, the cultural hero, and so on, from Alaska to Peru.
Is this the same, then, Venus perturbation that Velikovsky talks about in 1500 BC associated with the Jewish people leaving Egypt and the polar shift that cause the Red Sea to split and the amount of carbon dioxide in the air leading to the creation of manna? Carbon, what he considered to be a reaction between lightning and the carbon in the sky. Could you elaborate?
Well, let's just talk about Velikovsky's idea, and I really have to, for Velikovsky's sake, distinguish certain things that I've talked about from his work. Velikovsky claimed that the great plagues of Egypt, the plagues of the Exodus and so on, were connected with an overwhelming Venus catastrophe, and the Earth was completely shrouded in the great cometary tail of Venus. He claimed that out of that gaseous envelope, there was a congealing of hydrocarbons, or carbohydrates, I should say, of an edible sort, and that material descending on the earth was the source of manna in the Exodus account.
And directly associated with Moses and the migration through the desert.
Yes, and he claimed that there was an event remembered as the parting of the Red Sea that was caused by the tidal forces of Venus and the plagues of Egypt, the great wind and the earthquake and so on, and perhaps even the descent of vermin were related to this Venus cometary catastrophe. Now, I'm in a little bit of an ambiguous position here because my own research led a little in a different direction, and I tended to reinterpret some of these things in a non-Velikovskian way. Well, Velikovskian in the fundamental sense, but not Velikovskian in the specific sense that he was interpreting those stories. So I think out of respect for Velikovsky, We need to acknowledge that it was he who claimed that manna had descended from cometary tail.
What you're saying is you don't buy that, and that's where you differ with him. Is that about right?
Yeah, I've not been convinced of that, let's put it this way.
All right, very good. Well, we don't have to tiptoe around things, Dave.
Okay, and I'll avoid that.
Okay, on the wild card line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Hello. Hello there. No, you're not. On the second wildcard line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Good evening. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, I have, pardon?
Go ahead.
Well, I have over 700 replies from an ad in the newspaper.
For what?
And, pardon?
For what?
Could you hold on just a second?
No. Goodbye. On the first time caller line, you're on the air with Dave Talbot. Good evening. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air. Turn your radio off.
I have done that.
Okay, good. Where are you calling from?
From Phoenix.
From Phoenix. All right, go ahead.
My question is, if Velikovsky was such a renowned scholar before he published this work, what happened that the tables turned that he was then vilified for not being a good scholar? How did it not get turned around that people took the work more seriously rather than degrading the scientists?
That's a good question. What vilified him, Dave?
Well, he claimed certain things that the scientific community as a whole felt were completely incredible. And they would never believe that only a few thousand years ago planets were moving on such erratic courses. They would never believe that ancient mythology, a completely discredited source, could provide you a level of evidence on which you could challenge the foundations of modern science. Science has always assumed, in considering the planets, that those bodies have moved on the same courses for many, many millions of years.
Well,
and
of
entire
course.
Schools of science have actually been founded on those premises.
Yes, well, it would seem to me to support the biblical version of things, Dave.
Yes.
And you do agree with that. Now, as you know, the Bible claims that creation is not very old, that things were very different not very long ago, cosmically, just a few thousand years. And this would tend to support that Isn't that correct?
Well, I don't think Velikovsky believed that he was supporting that kind of literal interpretation of the Old Testament and so on.
Well, whether or not he thought it.
Did think that they thought that that's what Velikovsky was doing.
Oh, I
and
see.
In a sense, he was throwing his weight behind those kind of literal interpretations of the Old Testament.
All right, on that note, we've got a pause. Top of the hour. You're listening to Dreamland from the High Desert. I'm Art Bell.